Want a more fault-tolerant data center? Bring the availability of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Greetings all and welcome to another episode of TechNet Radio. I'm Dan Stultz. I'll be your host today as we take a look at shared virtual disks. You can reach me on my blog at itproguru.com. This episode is part of the series on SMB, which you can find at http://aka.ms/smb3series. Our guest today is Jose Barreto. Welcome, Jose.
Hello there. How's it going?
So, very good, sir.
Trying to continue to cover all the nooks and crannies of SMB3, right?
Yes, and doing a fabulous job. I think the last episode we talked about scale-out file server, and I'm guessing that as we talk about this, we'll be kind of building a little bit on that because part of this you can do on scale-out file server.
Absolutely, and we'll demo that too.
Awesome. Excellent. So let's start with, what is virtual disk sharing? What are some of the key benefits of it? Why do we care?
Sure. So this is all about high availability. So the idea here is you have your private cloud, you have some VMs in your environment, and you went full on virtualized, right? So everything runs in a virtual machine. Now, most people also want to combine that with high availability. So you want everything to be tolerant to individual failures of components and all that. And you can do that at the VM level. And that would basically mean that if one of your physical hosts goes away, the VM that was running that workload will come back up in another node, right? So that is the common scenario for virtualization. That is good for most workloads, but there are a couple of things there that you could do better. First of all, when you have this scenario where you transition the entire VM from one node to the next, you effectively need to restart the VM on the other physical node. And that takes some time, right? And what we're trying to do here is get the clustering piece to happen inside the VM. So instead of doing clustering at the host level and making the VMs highly available, you actually create, let's say, two VMs, and those VMs themselves are clustered. So when something happens, you don't have to restart the OS or anything because the other VM is already there waiting for you. So the idea here is take high availability inside the VMs. We typically call that guest clusters. And that's the basic scenario where this new capability fits in.
So since it's guest clustering, that implies, I guess, that portability and some of the other great features of virtualization still apply. Is that correct?
Yeah, so absolutely. When you're trying to deploy a solution like guest clustering, you want that your VMs can still be live migrated, right? So that you have the same benefits of virtualization. And that's part of the reason for going with the notion of shared VHDX. So right now, one of the things that you can do, let's say you're not running 2012 R2 yet, you're in 2012. So the options that you have for guest clustering are all about taking your outside infrastructure and presenting it directly to the VM. So you have iSCSI to the guest, you have virtual fiber channel. And that means that you actually expose your physical storage infrastructure to the cluster nodes that are in the guest. And this is interesting. We have been doing this for many years, but what we introduced in this release is the ability to actually virtualize that. So instead of exposing iSCSI or fiber channel to the inside of your virtual machine, you actually just point these virtual machines to the same virtual disk. And effectively, you do not expose your physical infrastructure to storage infrastructure to your VMs anymore. So from the inside of the VM, you look at the disk and say, hey, there's a disk here. But it doesn't look like iSCSI. It doesn't look like a fiber channel. If it's on the file server, it doesn't look like an SMB share. It looks inside the VM like you have a disk that's connected to the virtual machine directly, like a SAS disk. And what that gives you is the notion that the VM, as with all other things, doesn't really know what's going on. So it thinks that it has all of the memory of the system. The VM thinks it has all of the CPU of the system, and it thinks that it's directly connected to the storage, and it's the, and that's what it looks like to it. But if you're looking at this from the host perspective, you know that the VM is getting just a little bit of the memory, a little bit of your CPU, and in this case, it's actually sharing a VHD file to do its clustering business, right? So that's an interesting extra virtualization there on the storage.
Excellent. So I'm curious, so does that mean, since it has a drive letter, it looks like a local disk, I guess that, does that mean that I can also use it for my boot drive as well?
No, the scenario here is that you're trying to use clustering inside the guest. So the new thing here is the sharing of that disk. So you can always expose VHDs to VMs before, and we did that for boot or even data disks. But in this case, you're specifically doing this for a single disk that's shared across multiple virtual machines.
Got it. So you're sharing like a data disk, not necessarily a boot drive.
Yeah, it has to be a data disk because you have to be using failover cluster to manage the ownership of that. So essentially, the most common scenario you have is, let's say you have two VMs. Each VM has its own dedicated boot disk, and that's where each of them has Windows running and has the application installed and all that. And they also, in addition to that boot disk, they share a data disk. And that data disk is a third VHD that is effectively accessed by both VMs at the same time. That used to be a no-no, by the way. In the old days, it would say, hey, each VM gets its own VHD, no sharing of VHDs there because, you know, each VM gets its own, right? And now we're kind of changing that rule and saying, okay, if it is a data VHD that is being used in the guest to create a cluster, as shared storage for a cluster, then that's okay, and there is a process to go about doing it. It's actually very simple. When you add the VHD to the VM, there's a little flag that says, oh, by the way, I'm using this for sharing, so I want to share this virtual disk, right? And that's if you're using the GUI, there's a checkbox there in the GUI that adds the virtual disk.
Yep, I remember seeing it there. Yep.
Yeah, and if you're using PowerShell, there is a new switch, a dash shared virtual disk in the commandlet that adds the VM hard drive.
So does this technology leverages the VHD, VHDX format? Does it work with Gen 1 and Generation 2 virtual machines?
Okay, so a couple things there. One, it's only for VHDX. Right, so we don't use the old VHD format. There's actually a technical reason for that because we put some data in the metadata header of the VHD file
to show that it's shared. Yep.
And we like VHDX much better than we do VHD. Right, it can go bigger, and it has all the performance improvements, the alignment improvements. So VHDX in general, if you can, you should always go with that, right? As opposed to the traditional older 2 terabyte VHD. Right.
And yeah, plus the reliability factor of the logging and stuff that it does. Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's all goodness on the VHDX. And we decided for this new feature, since it's only for 2012 R2, we only work with VHDX. Now, your other question about
Generation 1
and 2, yep. There's actually an interesting twist there. So when you're doing Generation 1, you have to use the SCSI controller because in order for us to do this shared storage for the guest, you have to use a disk that can be shared. And that's that's why we use SAS, right? SAS has the ability to do this thing we call persistent reservation, which is basically the ability to share the disk in a way that it can be arbitrated between the two machines that are sharing it. So we don't, for the data disk on the generation one, you can use both IDE, right, the old ATA disk, or the new, or the SCSI. So we actually require that the shared disk be the SCSI one.
Right. And the which is usually going to be for data anyway, right?
Yeah, because you can have more of those, right? Right. Some people do use the IDE for data because you can have up to four IDE, right?
Right.
Yep. And up to more than 200 of the SCSI ones per VM. But what we typically do is you boot from IDE, and then you put your shared data VHD on the SCSI controller, okay? In fact, when you do the dash shared VHD, it actually, you don't even have to say that it's SCSI controller. It implies that, right?
Right.
Now, on the generation two, everything is SCSI, right? So there is no more IDE. In fact, it's not really a SCSI or IDE. It's a virtual disk, and it shows inside the VM as a virtual disk, and that's always SAS, right? So there is no option for the other one. You can boot from those, and that a word of caution, right? So you don't want to share your boot disk, and you could with a generation two. So just be careful there when configuring. But yeah, it works for both. It works for both Gen 1 and Gen 2 VMs. Gen 2 VMs are interesting. I mean, it's a brave new world out there. We're not trying to imitate hardware anymore. We're just going virtual, native virtual, I guess.
That's, creating our own hardware and software. Awesome.
Yeah. It's virtualization, right? So.
Yep. So now, from what I understand, there's a couple different ways that you can do the shared disk, or the virtual hard disk sharing via scale out or CSV. Before we get too deep into that, can you tell me a little bit about, for those that may not understand what shared cluster shared volumes are, can you give us a quick look at what that is and how it's changed in the most recent release?
Oh, CSV is just a way that in our Hyper-V infrastructure, right, when we first started, we had these individual disks that each node would see, and a disk would show up on only one node at a time. So you had this whole notion that you have to put some VMs in a node, and you have the disk has to follow the VM and all that. When we introduced CSV a couple of releases back, we created this notion that there was this new disk that effectively a clustered file system. But from your perspective, what it means is that every node in the cluster can see all the storage. So your VMs are now free to move about without this concern that the disk has to go where the VM is, because the disks are everywhere. Uh-huh. And it broke that relationship that we had between a disk and its VM, or the VM and its disk, right?
Which is one of the biggest problems that people had with CSV in the first place.
Yeah, because when we started this, right, we didn't have CSV back in 2008, right?
Right.
And you had to kind of pair your VM with your disk. Now that's gone away. And over time, we have been improving CSV little by little and adding a few features here and there. For instance, in the latest release of Windows in the 2012 R2, we added this whole notion of working to rebalance your CSVs across the cluster nodes automatically. It's like the ownership of the CSVs and a whole lot, a more sophisticated balancing of the CSVs, which is all fine and good. And and the shared VHDS feature works with CSV directly or through a scale-out file server, which is the other, if you think about it, it's a CSV behind a file share, right? Mm-hmm. So in effect, both scenarios where we support shared VHD, there's CSV behind it. It could be directly in the cluster or it could be in another cluster through the scale-out file server. But scale-out implies CSV. So effectively, for all scenarios where we're doing shared VHDX, CSV is involved there.
Okay, are there any key things that you want to point out about using scale-out versus CSV?
Well, the main thing here is whether you're using a single cluster where your storage and your compute are in the same cluster, mm-hmm. right? So that is common for like a small deployment. Or if you're using the model where you're, we typically call this the disaggregated model, where you have a compute cluster and a storage cluster, they are separate entities, right?
And so, you would use the CSV for the smaller environment?
Actually, you put your storage in one cluster, and that's where you have CSV, and you access it through SMB. So that becomes your scale-out file server cluster.
Got
And then on the other side, you have your compute cluster. And the compute cluster has nothing but VMs running. The storage is not there. The storage is in the other cluster. So let's say, for instance, you have a larger environment and you want to do, say, 1,000 VMs, right? Mm-hmm. And you're doing this in, let's say, 20 compute nodes. You have 20 physical hosts running Hyper-V, and they all run a few VMs. And then how do you do the storage for this? So if you try to wire storage to all 20 nodes, you're going to have to invest there because you need to do dual pathing and you need to do the connectivity to all of those. So typically what we do, you can create a two-node file server cluster that has, for instance, a JBOD behind it that you attach through SAS to those two nodes only, and that becomes your storage solution. Then your 20 compute nodes attach through the network, through your Ethernet network or any kind of network you have, go to the storage cluster through the wire. And then what you have is your compute cluster actually does not have any SAS connectivity, just the two nodes that are your scale-out file server have that connectivity. So you'd separate the roles. So for folks that come from a solution where they used to have a SAN device that's managed separately from your compute, it's very similar to that, but using the building blocks provided by Microsoft. So both clusters run Windows Server, and both clusters have their separate roles, if that makes sense.
It does. And so if you do have multiple volumes, multiple disks, do they have to be in the same CSV, or do they have to be in the same scale-out cluster?
Well, the way it works is you have, let's say, for instance, you have a storage cluster separate from your compute cluster, right? So typical configuration, you have, let's say, 100 physical disks. You put them in a pool, you create a few spaces out of it, and you have, let's say, you have 8 volumes, right? Uh-huh. Those 8 volumes are then, because you're using scale-out, they become CSVs. And then you have 8 CSVs. Each CSV is one of the volumes. And then if you want to expose that to the compute side, you create a share on each of the CSVs. So then you have 8 shares that you can access, and that's how the matching of share to space to pool happens on the other end. Now, if you're doing a single cluster for everything, so you're doing the aggregated solution, then the same thing happens. You have a pool of disks, and then out of that, you create a few volumes. They become CSVs. But because compute and storage are all in the same cluster, we don't need to create a file server, and you don't need to create shares. The VMs are put directly in the CSV. So two different solutions there, but effectively some parity in how these constructs are. Right?
Excellent. So, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of technology built in kind of under the covers to make all this magic happen. And since this is guest clustering, I imagine that technology is built into the guest itself. So are there limitations to what the guest OS support is? I mean, what could be running in the guest?
Yeah, so in fact, this is probably one of the most complex scenarios that we can put together because, you see, if you go for the complete solution, you have a cluster that runs your storage, right? So mm-hmm. that cluster is physically attached to storage, and in that cluster, what you really have as a role is a file server. Then you have a second cluster, also physical, where you have your compute nodes. Mm-hmm. So those are essentially nodes that run VMs. So it's a second cluster. The resources in those clusters are VMs, right? Mm-hmm. And then I pick two of those VMs and I build a guest cluster. And that guest cluster is a third cluster, right? And in that case, I have my actual workload. Let's say, for instance, a SQL Server cluster. So I'm not sure if you saw that movie Inception.
I did. I loved it.
So it's like there is a dream within a dream within a dream, right? So yep. you're effectively creating these multiple layers of abstraction.
Does it give us more time?
You just have to have a way, right, to figure out which of the three environments you're in, right? So you have to have your top spinning or something that tells you where you are. So
right.
Don't lose yourself there. But to answer your question, the storage cluster and the compute cluster, mm-hmm. the Hyper-V cluster, they need to be running Windows Server 2012 R2 for this to work, right? For shared okay. VHDX to be implemented. Now, the guests can be running 2012 or 2012 R2. Effectively, those are the two that we support and test. We actually saw that it works going back all the to all systems that we have the integration components, the Hyper-V components inside the guest. But we saw that most people doing this are actually using 2012 and R2, and we had limited ability to go back, you know, infinitely all the way back to 2008. So we decided to support inside the guest 2012 R2 and 2012.
Excellent. Is storage space not required then? What are the requirements?
Actually, it works well with spaces, but it's not really required. In fact, I've seen folks, because you think if you do this, you can actually avoid doing iSCSI to the guest. You can actually just stop using virtual fiber channel completely. So the storage on the host side, right? If you're in the Hyper-V cluster, it could be iSCSI, it could be Fiber Channel, it could be SMB, it could be Spaces, it could be anything that you can put a VHDX on.
Okay.
Right? As long as you have a VHDX and you have CSV, it's fair game, right? And why would you do that? Because I'm not sure if you ever try to do Virtual Fiber Channel or iSCSI to the guest. Configuring those guest clustering solutions is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And
as that's I easier in the newer versions, but it's still hard. Yep.
Yeah, and the main thing is that let's take Virtual Fiber Channel, for instance. So you have to actually have a specific kind of Fiber Channel HVA that supports a technology called NPIV, meaning that a single host can have multiple IDs at the same time.
Right.
And then you have to actually do the proper zoning and masking so that LUN that you want to expose to the virtual machine is properly configured. And then inside the virtual machine, you actually see the virtual fiber channel infrastructure and the fiber channel LUNs. And so there's a whole lot of configuration, not to mention, I mean, I'm not sure if you play with fiber channel, but this whole thing with worldwide names and other identification, let's just say it's a little involved. If you do shared VHDX, you can do your fiber channel infrastructure just to the host. Then you create that CSV, and then you put the VHD file there. And that's it. You share the VHD file, and the VMs see a disk based out of that. And inside the guest, there's no way to tell that you're using fiber channel or iSCSI or spaces or a file share for that matter. So it's really interesting to kind of keep the abstractions in place, but not expose too much infrastructure. Because you don't want your guests to know, especially if you're, say you're a hoster, right? Mm-hmm. And you're trying to offer that as a service to your tenants. You don't want them to see the IP address of your iSCSI target, right? You don't want them to be able to have like a fiber channel connection to the array and understand how your array is configured and maybe try to do some in-band management of the array or any kind of crazy stuff like that. So what they see is SAS, but it's virtual, right? effectively, that SaaS is could be in reality Fibre Channel or iSCSI or SMB or cluster source spaces. So
totally, it works with anything. It doesn't matter.
Nope, does not. As long as you have CSV, you're good.
Awesome. Okay, so maybe you can do some quick demo time?
Yeah, let's go do it.
Shows around?
Yeah. All right, so here's our demo environment. So if you've been following my blog, you probably saw my description of this environment, and I actually have step-by-step PowerShell to configure it. But what I have here is the three clusters that we talked about. So on my A cluster, I have my A1, A2, and A3 nodes. You see that I have a scale-out file server. And this is a classic cluster. We have our storage here, which is all, I have all of 7 CSVs configured here. And it has all the right resources. So this is what I call my A cluster. So that's the storage cluster. Now, if I go here to my B cluster, what you will see, this is my compute cluster. So the B cluster has two nodes, B1 and B2, and I have 2 VMs running, right? And these VMs are called VM1 and VM2. You'll notice that VM1 is stored on my node B2 and VM2 is stored on my node B1. And these VMs are using shared VHDX. How do I know? I actually go into the I want to show this in Hyper-V. So I actually go here to the properties of my virtual machine. When I look at my settings, you will see that this virtual machine, as we described, has an OS disk, right? So this OS disk is not shared. In fact, this is a Generation 1 VM, and I have my IDE drive here. You can tell that I have this on my share. So if you remember, right, on the cluster, I had my F resource. Mm-hmm. And over here on the other two drives, I have them under my SCSI controller. So there's this little tiny change here in the advanced features. I have enabled virtual hard disk sharing. So that's it.
That's what you do to deploy it as well, right? To set it up?
The one checkbox that you have to do. You do it as you would otherwise do, and then you go and say, I want to enable this. If you're doing this on PowerShell, there's a switch there as well to do it. And I did it for both. I actually have a witness disk and a data disk. And again, in my data disk, I have the virtual hard disk sharing.
Now, is that exposed in VMM as well?
Yeah, in VMM, we have, and when you create a template, you have the option to get that exposed as well. And VMM knows how to deploy a cluster, for instance, a SQL cluster, where it creates the first node and then deploys the VHDs, and then on the second node, it deploys the OS but shares the data VHDs. Yeah, so that's all plumbed all the way to VMM.
Excellent.
Yeah, so here I also have my D, which is my domain controller, my V, which is my VMM box, but I want to show you the third cluster. So this, you remember you saw VM1 and VM2? So this is looking inside VM1 and VM2, and I call this my X cluster, right? So I have X1 and X2. These are two VMs effectively, and what you see here is that these VMs, they truly believe they have those disks that we used as shared VHDX. So it has a data disk, it has a witness disk, and if you dig deeper into the configuration, you find that these are actually matching those two shared VHDX that we had before. And inside my guest cluster, what I have here is SQL Server running, right? So if you look in here, I can look that this is a traditional failover cluster with SQL Server, and I have my name resource, my IP resource, and I have my cluster disk and SQL Server is running. And just for kicks, I'm going to go ahead and move this from one node to the next node, and you'll see that it will do all the right things from a SQL perspective offline. So it quickly offline, now it's onlining the IP address, the cluster disk is already online on the other node. And if you look here, now the name is online, and now we are onlining the SQL service. So that's the main difference between doing a guest cluster and a host cluster. See, I'm back online already, SQL Server is online, and the agent is coming online. So it takes just a few seconds to make that transition, right, between one node and the next. Now, if I had this with the traditional host cluster, what would happen on a transition is that the host system would have to shut down. I have to boot the virtual machine again in the other node, and the OS would have to load, and then the database has to load and do recovery, all that. In here, because I'm using a guest cluster, I have actually two machines, in this case X1 and X2, two virtual machines. They are running SQL ready to go, and I can quickly transition the current instance between one and the next. So it's a very quick transition, just a few seconds. Same fashion, you could have a failure of a node. So if, let's say, my physical node B1 goes away. So you notice here that B1 has VM2. So if that goes away, then what would happen is the other node would have the other VM, and it would quickly take over and bring back their service as soon as possible to have like very quick, just a few seconds of transition there in my failover.
And that can happen automatically.
Yeah, that's all set up to happen, and it keeps, cluster does this, it does the regular heartbeat between the machines. As soon as something goes bad, it knows to take over and give it to the other node.
Excellent. This is awesome, and one of the things that I know people are going to be thinking as they look at this is this environment is fairly complex, and where you have multiple machines and multiple VHDs or VHDXs, is there an easy way to tell where the underlying storage is, or if I have a particular store, you know, what machines are being stored on that particular store?
Sure. We have all the tooling. So from inside the virtual machine, you see just the disk that you have. That would be in the X1, X2 cluster. On the B1, B2, you'll see the VMs and all the data disks that are associated with each VM, and you can query them all. But if you want, you can go all the way here to the storage cluster in good old PowerShell here. So if I do a get SMB share, you see that I have all my shares here that I showed you. Mm-hmm. And I actually have a command line here that will give me a list of all the open files in this cluster. So you can see that I have my VM1 data here, right? So there's a configuration file. You will see the OS disk for VM1 is over here. And then you see that the opens for the data disk. So you see that the data disk here is open twice. So one time by the B1 node, the other by the B2 node, and they both have this decoration here saying colon shared virtual disk. So this is how I can tell that this is actually a VHD that's being shared. Same for my witness disk. And you notice that the OS disks are not shared.
Right. So this is really cool, because as I'm looking at this, you know, really simple PowerShell script, you're really only calling get-smb open file, and then all the rest of that is just sorting it and displaying it. So that is an awesome, awesome commandlet.
Yeah, and because I'm doing this from my storage end, right, it actually consolidates the information. I am in node A1 right now, but if I had multiple open files on A1, A2, and 3, the get SMB open file will give me a consolidated cluster view. So I'll see all the open files from all nodes. So it's a very useful thing. And you can do all kinds of fun stuff. You can group by client. You can do all kinds of sorting like I did here. So yeah, PowerShell is definitely your friend. And if you have this deployed also with VMM, VMM also has management tools to look into which VMs are deployed where, what the file servers are, and all that good stuff. So we got this plumbed all the way. But honestly, PowerShell is my favorite.
Awesome. Excellent. Okay, anything else you care to share with us in your demo?
No, just to highlight that this demo environment is actually something that was fully documented, and we have all the instructions, the description on how to go build it, and I encourage you to take a look there, and there's some sample code, there's a sample output, and you can dig a little deeper as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Jose. This has been an outstanding show. Thank you so much for joining us, Jose. We've learned so much about shared virtual disks, about the whole cluster shared volume, a bit about scale-out, and I feel pretty comfortable myself being able to actually go turn this on since it's just a checkbox away. We had the opportunity to throw some pretty good charts up there too. So that was awesome. Thanks a lot for all of this. Really appreciate this, and looking forward to hanging with you on our next episode of TechNet Radio.